Mysterio Lionel! Extraordinario! Magnifico!
Welcome to episode 33 of the Football Corner, or as we're calling it, lockdown episode number 2. My name is Vikram.
I'm Shreyas.
And if you guys are new or old, you can catch us wherever you get your podcasts, Google, Apple, Stitcher, Spotify, CastBox, and more.
And don't forget to follow us on social media. That's at Muncher Podcasts.
Well done, Shreyas. Well done. So there's a lot to talk about. Plus, we have an interesting segment where we're going to discuss who we think Manchester United and Liverpool should be targeting in the transfer window. But before that, a lot to sort of wade through with news around the world of football. And I think the stuff that's been grabbing the headlines, especially this past week, is this wage cut battles that have been going on between the PFA and the FA, essentially, the Footballing Association of England, and the players who play in the Premier League. So,
right.
I think the Barcelona and the Spanish league sort of took the lead on this, where they mutually decided to cut the wages for playing staff so that they could support the club as well as emergency services and stuff as well. I know Leo Messi came out with a statement saying, or an Instagram post, which kind of counts as a statement nowadays, I don't even know, saying that the players are more than happy to do it, except that they weren't happy with how much pressure the club hierarchy put them under. And then a lot of Italian clubs follow suit, Juve as well. But the sort of impasse came when that cycle reached England. And there's been a lot of pushback and a lot of opinions being thrown around in terms of whether they should do it, why they should do it. And I think it sort of capsized when Liverpool and Tottenham decided to use the government furlough scheme, where they could take taxpayer money essentially to pay almost 80% of wages for non-playing staff for the club. And a lot of players, especially a lot of ex-Liverpool players, Jamie Carragher, Danny Murphy, a lot of players like Wayne Rooney, they all hit back at the club because the thinking there is that these clubs are so financially successful, they're in such a good place financially, that for them to exploit taxpayer money to pay off staff for their within their club is something that's just not a good look, essentially. And Liverpool's already backtracked because of the media pressure they faced. They decided to forego the scheme. So there's a lot going on in England regarding footballers. A lot of people think, footballers included, obviously, think that they're being vilified just because of the amount of money they earn. And a lot of people are pushing back. So Wayne Rooney said that, listen, I'm more than happy to support the NHS and the emergency services. I'll be more than happy to donate. But why are clubs asking players to forego salary or reduce salary? Is it so that they can balance their own books, or is it so that they can gather enough money to donate to these essential services? So that's still an ongoing debate. I think the National Health Secretary of England came out with a statement saying players should do their parts, which was absolutely absurd. There are so many things they should be focusing on and not football players. So there's a lot going on, man. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so firstly, I'll give you a TL, semicolon DR version,
yeah,
which is basically what these clubs are doing. It's called Trumping 101. It's how you take advantage of the gray areas in law and tax, yeah, and it just works to your benefit.
Right.
This is why there's so many books and theories and outlooks that the more billionaires you have in your country, the more wrong there is in your country.
It's just such a bad look because, and you know what the funniest thing about this entire situation was? That I think Liverpool and Tottenham decided to take that forward, the furloughing their staff and take the government money, I think, around about the same time. And then Liverpool immediately got so much hate. And then whenever Tottenham came out, they said, Daniel Levy, yeah, it's kind of understood. It's just unbelievable, the difference in reactions for those two clubs.
Yeah, I mean, owners and chairmen, yeah, they're like the worst of the worst. It's, you'll be lucky enough to get them to, you know, be interviewed, show up in the media, stuff like that. So they're like the ultimate bad boys. But coming down to the players, stuff that Messi has said, Toni Kroos has said, it's such a weird place to be, because if they agree to a pay cut, it's blanket. It's all players take a pay cut. And maybe they're just told that our intention is to for a higher purpose, basically. Versus what Toni Kroos said, that I'd rather want the option to donate myself. Whether it's all of my salary, if it's a part, whatever it might be. So, I don't know, it's so weird just being under the media scanner for a player in these times. Yeah. Kyle Walker, Declan Rice, Mason Mount. We'll get to a Tottenham story, which is hilarious. So, yeah.
It's weird. And you know what the touchy part about here is that a club like Man United has more money to sustain itself, but a club like Southampton doesn't. So how do you look at this? Like, logically, fine, Southampton is in more need of that relief. So it's the urgency of its players and its playing staff in order to take a pay cut so that it can support the club's sustenance is understood. But whereas with a Manchester United, a Real Madrid, a Barcelona, or a Juventus, or whatever it is, it's not as equally understood. So that's one thing there as well. And I think one thing that, I take the example of the NBA. As soon as the NBA season got canceled, obviously, like, just American capitalism, the first thing that rang in everyone's ears was money, sustenance. Kya hoga? Kya nahi hoga? How are teams going to do it? And the literally the players, like, the first knee-jerk response of the players was that, listen, we're going to come together. We're going to pool all our money and our resources so that we can set up a fund that pays all of the non-playing staff and the essential workers of our team, of our organization, so that those guys still get the money that they need to sustain themselves, because they don't earn as much. And given these tough times, they need the money to sustain themselves. So we're going to make sure that we pay them. And that was such a cool sort of solution to the conundrum of how will a club pay the salaries of everyone when they're not earning any money.
Yeah.
But here it's just this mix of, like, we need to donate to the NHS, we need to donate to the essential services, that getting muddled with we need to balance our books as a club so that we're not at a loss. That muddled with how high the salaries of these footballers are, it's just become this amalgamated weird concoction that is just, it's so toxic. And I'm glad people are at the PFA is constantly talking, like, all this dialogue is constantly happening so that they can find a solution. But there is a solution there. There is a right thing to do. And I just hope, like, these players can come together and figure it out. And I have no doubts that they will. It's just the amount of time it's taking and the amount of mudslinging that it's led to it's a little absurd now.
Yeah, I mean, I think this ugliness between clubs and players that they currently employ is going to continue to be on that ugly train from now till whenever the season opens up, because a lot of players' contracts are expiring as of July. So they'll have to be probably minor extensions, 2-3 months to finish the league, maybe 6 months, maybe a year. So I think the clubs are just sharpening their horns right now.
Yeah, I don't know. And I think that there needs to be, like, a blanket solution that favors all clubs, right? Because the clubs, mid-table clubs or lower level clubs, like, they don't have the financial prowess to sustain themselves. So you can't have this solution is for a Man United, Liverpool, and the solution is for this club. And it needs to come from the players. Because, I mean, I think the average salary of an EPL player is just so high right now that there's a lot that can be done with that resource pool. And I just hope they figure out the right steps. Anyway, why don't we just move on to other news outside of England. Let's jump to Belgium first, why don't we?
Belgium,
Belgium is the first, or the Belgium Football League is the first league in all of Europe, out of all the major leagues, to cancel its season and dish out points, trophies, demotions, etc. From a as it stands sort of point of view, which effectively has crowned Club Brugge as the champions. What are your thoughts on that?
One, no one really gives too much of a beep to the Belgium league. I think I know like 4 or 5 clubs. I know there's a Genk and a Gent. And the funny part...
Not the point, is that, dude. Not the point.
No, because Liverpool had a away match to one of the Genk or Gents. And these Liverpool fans went to the wrong city.
Yeah, that happened. No, so they actually went to the Belgium Genk, whereas they weren't supposed to. It was a different Genk. I think that's what happened.
So they went to a different country, you mean?
I don't know, but the Genk in Belgium is the famous one. And I think they went to the they were playing the non-famous one, so they ended up coming to... I think that's what happened. I'm not too sure on that. Don't quote me, but I feel like that's what happened.
Exactly. That's my take on Belgium. But jokes apart, I think it's a good switch. It's instant, and everything that happens from now starts when the conditions are good enough to play again, and that's when the next season starts. They don't have to worry about schedules. They don't have to worry about players moving up and down. They don't have to worry about anything. They just restart as if they took an extended break. So from that perspective, it makes sense.
I see your point there, but see what that puts... I mean, they're looking at next season. They're considering next season, and then they took this step. But it really doesn't do justice to... Well, this season will always have an asterisk. Club Brugge's trophy will always have an asterisk, firstly. And then what about the demoted clubs? Like, how does that work? Like, do those clubs who are at the bottom three right now just get demoted? What if the third bottom club and the fourth bottom club were literally a point apart? So that fourth bottom club just escaped willy-nilly. So I don't think it's completely fair. I feel like they should have waited a little bit, firstly, like all of the other clubs are doing. They should have tried to figure out how to find a right amicable solution for this season. And then I still feel that's the right way to go in general, is to figure out how to end this season the right way, firstly, mutually decided way. And then take the hit on the next season, because when you take the hit on the next season, it's pre-decided, it's discussed with all the teams, all the players, all the stakeholders involved, and then you begin the season with that in mind. So you approach the season with that mentality. But to cancel it, I don't know. I'm not in favor of it. But as you said, I mean, Brugge is champions, so congrats, I guess. I don't know what else to say for them.
Give them a break. Like, let them concentrate on eating chocolate and creating more Kevin De Bruyne's than Hazard. So, yeah, I'm happy. Go Brugge.
Sure. Where we ended there. The other thing, news coming out of Germany, a bunch of teams are, restarting training within the whole social isolation norms that are mandated by the German league as well as the government. So I know Frankfurt and Bayern are back in training. I think they're doing training in pairs, or like people are maintaining distance, but they're doing these training sessions already. Germany as a country, touch wood, is handling the pandemic pretty well. I mean, not pretty well, but compared to other nations and all of that. So they're looking like they're in a position to restart the league sooner than other countries would be able to. But a lot of that also depends on foreign players who are in their team. I don't know how it's going to work out, but these teams have already started practicing a little bit and training together or within the same vicinity as opposed to doing isolated training at home. So it should be looking good for other teams in the German league to start beginning training as well. And maybe that can be a precursor to when the league starts again.
Right. I mean, it's so weird. I know coincidence or not, but countries that have women leaders, they've apparently handled the pandemic the best. So Angela Merkel, yo, jokes they, apart.
They. I mean, just to stay on that for a bit, they ended. They, I think they're the country with the largest proportion of GDP allocated to fighting this pandemic.
So yeah, I mean, they're the powerhouse of Europe.
Yeah. So they took it like whatever approach they've taken is the right one. They've actually spent the right amount of money that's necessary, as opposed to Trump and other countries.
Yeah, Trump and Modi are busy twisting each other's arms, talking about hydroxychloroquine, whatever that is.
Chloroquine,
yeah. But no, I mean, coming back to the training part, so what? Like, I think it's more fitness focus, which is why it's partners, it's maintaining social distance, you can still talk to each other, can hear your coaches. But if you're like, for example, doing a rondo, the players will never get tackled. So whoever's inside will stay inside.
You can't even do a rondo. That's breaking the norms right now. So it's more fitness, and I think it's also like, it's like players just like, people have been isolated for so long. So just to see your teammates again, or just interact with them, even if you're interacting from a while, it that also builds a lot. Like the mental side of it also needs to ease up. And there's just a lot more drills and stuff you can do. So when you're working in isolation, you're doing it yourself. I mean, obviously you have a training plan, and you can constantly FaceTime with your trainer or whatnot, but he's right in front of you. It's a much more effective training for sure. So it's just, these guys will be better prepped as opposed to other players who are just sitting at home and doing their training on their own. But there is a man in England and who took this to heart and decided to call three of his players to a park in London. Not a park, just like a small football field, by the name of Jose Mourinho.
Yep.
Mourinho decided to call Ndombele, Davinson Sanchez, and I think Ryan Sessegnon.
Sessegnon.
For training. Is he crazy, dude? Is he mad? The club is furious, obviously, because they're like, we have rules set for everyone in our organization to follow. And then, you know, like a Jack Grealish is breaking quarantine and like smashing his car, and he's getting so much flack. And here the manager is like, hey, Tangi, let's do a training session, bro. What is wrong with him, dude? I love him, but what is wrong with him? What is wrong with him? And now he's like, I'm sorry.
I mean, he's actually, his media persona, he's become super polite and super like nice in his Spurs purple sort of avatar. But slightly going off topic, there are these weird articles where you have unclaimed spaces of land, and the rule is that in international waters, so to say, that if there's a piece of unclaimed land and you put down your flag, automatically you own that piece of land. That piece of land could be big enough to count as a country. It could be a strip of land. It could be an island. That's how individuals can own islands. And if it doesn't come under the purview of a neighboring big country, then literally you can reclaim it. So if I were to ever do that, because that's a serious ambition of mine, Jose Mourinho for Prime Minister.
For your country?
Yes.
Oh, God. I mean, you'll never be short on drama for sure. This guy's amazing. He's amazing.
I love him.
The cojones, dude, on this guy is just like unbelievable to have a training session with, literally to do whatever he can to better his squad. I mean, gotta admire that. But extremely foolish to do it in these times. I mean, I thought he got it because he was like,
Sorry, go ahead.
I was saying, I thought he got it because like when this started, he was like volunteering for and helping out like the elderly in his neighborhood and like doing this and doing that. So I felt like, okay, he gets it. He gets the implications of the situation we're under. And then he just calls up Tangi for a training session in a park in London. I don't get it. I don't get this guy.
No, but that's the thing, right? The people under the media scanner, where every expression of theirs is under camera, under scrutiny, you know, they're made to do these public announcements, show up, represent. Kyle Walker, for example.
Right.
One day he's like, please respect the lockdown, don't go out, stay safe, keep fit, etc., etc., etc. A bit of asterisks, you know, for lack of a better phrase, literally a sex part.
Yep.
And then he has to come out and apologize because one way or the other, the news slipped out.
So the guy's getting bored, dude.
I mean, Mason Mount and Declan Rice get bored. They play five-a-side with their snoods, which is basically covering half of their face. They're wearing their hoodies. You can literally see their forehead and their eyes. And you still found out that it's Mount and Rice.
Yeah.
That's one generation of footballers, of kids. And then you have this badass Kyle Walker doing his thing. So I think it's somewhat unfair. But the trade-off is that they get to earn that kind of money and they earn that idolism and stuff. So
no, and then you need to be responsible because you're role models for a lot of young people as well. So to not being responsible, like, you can't escape the media now. It's for someone who doesn't get that, like, I mean, then you're not going to be successful. You can't escape the media scrutiny. So you need to understand that you're still role models for such, like, so many young kids out there that obviously if you mess up, news is going to come out. So you have to be careful. And who's to say he hasn't had 10 sex parties already and this is the one that he got caught with?
Correct.
So that's one thing there. On a, not a positive note, but on a note that I'm biased positively towards, Pep is super furious with him. So is Manchester City. So apparently he's going to bench him now, which means João Cancelo might get more playing time. I don't know. Brighter side for me. I love João Cancelo. I love seeing that guy play. So that could be interesting.
I think you enjoyed him more in Juve colors.
I'm just sad he's not getting to play. Like, you buy him, you play him, man. Like, why are you not playing him? It's just so annoying. Anyway, like,
how old is the guy?
He's not that old. He's like mid-20s, maybe, like 24-ish.
Yeah, so maybe it's a very Bernardo Silva situation where he is now the new David Silva. So
that's what I assumed. When Bernardo came to City, he didn't play that much. And then everyone's like, why isn't he playing? And then the season after that, he just like burst out of the gates and killed everything. I'm thinking that's what it is. Like, Cancelo still hasn't adapted to City system yet and all of that. So maybe it's that. I don't know what it is. I just hope that this is a catalyst for that to happen because he's super talented. And it was clear to see, like, he would play right midfield. He would play right back. And he just slotted and left back. He just completely like own everything. So very talented guy. And maybe it's the whole getting adjusted to the city system takes a season. So that could be it. Anyways, we digress. So that's essentially what we had in terms of a roundup. I'm excited to get to this new segment now. We spoke about Chelsea in the last episode where we gave our 2 cents in terms of who we thought Chelsea should be targeting in the transfer market. We've done the same for Man United and Liverpool now. You said you've done 3 to 4 players, which is unclear. I've done 3 players, or 3 positions rather. Let's attack it in that sense. So why don't we talk Man U first? Because I think that's the easier one to tackle. So just off the bat for Manchester United, I have a centre back, I have centre forward and attacking midfield as the 3 positions that I feel like they need to reinforce.
I have centre forward and centre back too. Midfield, I have CA/CDM.
Okay, so more in the center, holding, just stitching play together and stuff. Fair enough.
Right.
So let's get to the obvious, center back. So I know they've been hurting in center back. Victor Lindelof and Harry Maguire having to sort of make sure they play. They have the Phil Joneses and they have the Rojos on loans and stuff like that. I know one thing, and this might be your pick. I know one thing that's been doing the rounds for like now, what now feels like 10 seasons already, is like Koulibaly to Manchester United as a centre back. Is that your pick?
No.
Okay, great.
He was my pick for Chelsea, remember?
he's your pick for Chelsea, right. I actually think that, Koulibaly is obviously a great pick. I would love to see him partner with Harry Maguire. He's a beast, and he's a beast at the heart of a defense. What I actually think might be a more prudent thing for United to do is, albeit controversial, but call Chris Smalling back from Roma.
Because you think he's done so well at Roma? Is that your only piece of...
He's always been, from a skill level, I feel like he's always been good. It's experience and presence during a game where he's always been lacking, according to me. Like, he'll just be lost in terms of, like, what do I do next? And that, I feel like he's gained a lot in Roma this season. He's excelled for them. He's done really well. Whenever he's been called upon, he's done a good job. So I think that confidence is really going to help him now get to that next level as a player. So if they're willing to spend the amount of money that Koulibaly is going to cost, save that money, call Chris Smalling back. You have Lindelof as a backup, and invest that money somewhere else.
But here's the thing. United have donkeys amounts to spend. They spend 100, 150 million plus last season. They still suck.
On two defenders.
A Koulibaly makes sense on paper. What, 100 million plus? I don't know. Carlo Ancelotti wants to bid for him from Everton. I don't know how that works.
Where is Everton? Sorry, side note. I digress again. Where does Everton get this money from? They've been linked with James Rodriguez. They've been linked with Koulibaly. Everyone Ancelotti's ever managed who's good they've been linked with. Where are they getting this money from? Have they been just like saving money for 10 years and all of a sudden they have $1 billion to spend? How does it work?
See, Ancelotti, like, just imagine his face, him chewing his gum or whatever. Give him a pinstripe suit, and he's gangster, bro. Like, he's like he's a one man mafia.
Okay,
so I see. That's that. My interpretation.
Therefore, he can get Koulibaly in his team.
Jokes apart.
Right.
I don't know if Smalling coming back is the best idea.
Okay. Who's your pick?
But my pick is a weird Leicester coup to continue the coup and get
Soyuncu.
Yep.
Okay. I can see that.
He's a poor man's Maguire.
I think that's a pretty interesting pick, but I don't see Leicester letting him go unless they can replace him,
right?
Or maybe they have like a Soyuncu in their back pocket, like when you were like, oh my god, Harry Maguire is leaving Leicester, what are they gonna do? And then they just like pull out Soyuncu. So maybe if Soyuncu leaves, they pull out Soyuncu part two and they're like, haha, suckers. That's exactly. The only way I see it happening. So he had a tremendous season. I think he was like in almost everyone's fantasy team at one point or the other. Everyone I know or everyone in the leagues I'm part of, he was in their team at one point or another. Like 4 point something on the FPL. Crazy returns. Actually a very technically gifted player, so very good as a defender, as a centre back. He'd be a great pick, but I'm not sure if it's feasible for Leicester at this point of time. So let's see. I think Koulibaly is obviously going to be the one they're going to go after, but if it doesn't work out, there are a lot of interesting cheaper options that they could sort of throw into that team and force Phil Jones out finally. So coming to the next one that we had in common, I think center forward number 9, why don't you go first? I have honestly not one single player here. It's just a bucket idea of players that could work.
Yeah. Right.
De Gea?
Similar. Yeah. No, I mean, like, you have an idea of what they need, but you can't put a name to it.
Yeah, I have like multiple names that could work, but I'm not too sure which is the right one here. Do you have like one player that they should go after?
No, I have a couple, but definitely a preference, and that is Harry Kane.
Harry Kane, we've been hearing that quite a bit, especially the last week and a half. He's apparently tired of Tottenham, which I thought he should have been like three seasons ago, but finally good to hear that he's coming around to it. Tottenham switching to a United, I can only picture Daniel Levy just sitting there trying to come up with the most sinister transfer package.
150
it's happened
million.
Before. 150 million, fair.
Yeah.
I think obviously like the bigger teams that could throw a spanner in United's works is like a Real Madrid have always wanted Harry Kane, at least for the past two seasons or so. Their experiments with Jovic haven't gone well this season, so they're definitely looking to strengthen their number nine as well. So Kane could be one. Kane's on my list too. I mean, I completely agree. That'd be a great sort of English transfer, you know, keeping it within the thing. Youngish still, so good, thorough, like number nine. I love Kane. I wouldn't mind seeing him in the United jersey. Who's your other pick?
So my other pick, the preface to that is that I'm going to start an Instagram handle called Transfers from Palika Bazaar.
Okay.
So that's sasta players, but you get the same thing, exactly the same thing. Hashtag Jagar.
Okay.
So
okay.
If they want to do another Ibrahimovic, they can go to PSG for Edinson Cavani. Insane salary, maybe free, 30 plus.
Maybe free.
A beast. So that just works out somehow.
Workhorse. Yeah, I completely agree. The only, I love Cavani. I've always loved Cavani ever since Napoli.
Napoli.
He hasn't dipped. He's just like constantly working really hard and like just like you see his work rate. And I love people who have high work rates, especially center forwards who just like dying to get to the ball and make stuff happen. The only issue there is that, I mean, again, this is like secondhand information / an opinion of one guy. But I've already forgotten the name, a guy who's the captain of a major team in Uruguay, who's close personal friends with Cavani, has said that Cavani's already decided that he's going to come here. So that might be the only issue. There's been a lot about Cavani. Back to Uruguay.
Back to Uruguay.
So there have been a lot of talk about Cavani after his PSG contract, which is getting over soon, just going back to Uruguay because he's like, I want to go back home. The lure of a Manchester United is tough to turn down. So that might be interesting. So I think a lot of things that will attract a lot of players to United now is the promise of the project. So we saw this season where they were like putting pieces together. I think after Bruno Fernandes came in, you could see like they're heading in the right direction. So if this next window, whenever it does open, they manage to get a lot of these interesting pieces in place, then the lure of more people wanting to come to United will increase. And that will be something like an Edinson Cavani will find it very hard to turn down. I love that option. I'm just not sure if it'll work out. He does have a high salary, but I don't think United mind paying it. It's just age is not on his side. That's the only thing. And it's untested. He's untested in the Premier League. And the two leagues that he's shown in are Italian League, where we know how strikers, they have to work much harder. So how I test strikers is that if you're in the Italian League and you're getting 25 goals or 30 goals, that means you're mad. You're excellent. You're the best poacher out there. You're the best like dude to have in the box. And he's done that multiple times where like he's excelled for Napoli in the Serie A. And he went to PSG with Ibra there and now Neymar there and Mbappe there. And he was still managing to get his goals in and stuff like that. So he's a proven player. And I think he'll be excellent at United. Remains to be seen whether it might actually happen. So those are two actually pretty interesting picks. Anyone else you have in mind?
That's it. I mean, I have attacking players that can substitute as wingers or support strikers. Then I had Jadon Sancho. I had possibly Martin Odegaard, being more of a playmaker. But considering they have enough on the wings, Bruno Fernandes attacking, I think Strick's number nine.
Okay, fair. I think I like Kane. I think the only other number nine that could work, not the only other, but a cool number nine that could work out here, and this is something that just obviously rumor mills, and you there's like almost every player is linked with every club now. One thing, one cool one that I found was Aubameyang to Manchester United. I think that would be pretty insane.
I love the guy. Hate on Arsenal as much as you can, but this guy is Palika version of Henry. Number 14, the guy is a beast. Consistently,
he's unbelievable.
Yeah, 20 goals a season, sometimes playing on the wing. The guy is insane, but he's 30 plus. I don't know how that works. Proven in the Premier League, yes. May go to Barcelona. He's been linked
literally everywhere. Barcelona, Real, PSG, everyone has thrown their hat in the ring, or we're made to believe. But I think him at United is going to be actually a very astute buy, because like you said, he's proven in the Premier League. Fine, he has two, maybe three top level seasons in him. United is happy to pay for that and figure out like their situation until that point. So like, have someone who can teach a Greenwood, who can work off of a Rashford or a Martial, get these guys together. I think that'll be a pretty good buy. Obviously, I feel like Kane is going to be their first option, just like Koulibaly will be their first option for defense. My third player actually is, why I said attacking midfielder is because I feel like the likes of Bruno Fernandes and Daniel James need some sort of cover. They need some sort of backup in terms of a player. Not necessarily someone who can take their place. But if one of them does get injured, then they're back in that awkward spot of, should we play Mata? Should we play Lingard? What do we do in this situation? Can Rashford now deputize as a winger? So to just avoid that situation, they need to figure out some sort of a backup. And the fact that they've constantly been linked to these Madisons and Grealishes of the Premier League just goes to show that they're also of that same intent. So I don't have one particular player who can fill that slot. I mean, honestly, if a Madison or a Grealish or one of these young wingers does end up coming to United, that's great, because more fight for that wing position and more options for Ole to figure out how to set up his attacking mid around his forward line and his strike force. So again, no one in particular. Honestly, anyone who can work out, young English MO, whatever. They just need that cover for Bruno Fernandes and Daniel James currently.
Right, actually, maybe you can interview for a scout position at United, because that makes so much sense.
High praise. Wow, thank you.
But the way I see it, assuming Pogba stays for another 6 to 12 months, maybe.
Right.
I hate the McTominay, Matic, Fred, Andreas Pereira central midfield. That's the core of your team. Roy Keane has played there. Scholes has played there. So that needs a serious revamp, according to me. And you want a workhorse. You want all cylinders firing. You go to Atletico Madrid. And you go for Saul Niguez.
You think Simeone will let him go?
No. I mean,
well, you never know. Simeone last season, I mean, the players he let go from his team, I was pretty surprised that he did that. Right. Griezmann, and then his the fullbacks, Theo Hernandez and stuff. So I'm pretty surprised he let those guys go. So maybe he let these guys go as well. I don't know. Simeone is super unpredictable. You can never say what's in his mind.
He got the Barry Beckham in Kieran Trippier.
they got the belly back of Kieran Trippier, who's had a pretty decent season at Atletico, to be fair.
Right.
Props to him.
But I think for the right price, I guess his release clause is 111, 120 million, something like that. The guy's 24, 25 years old. He's been playing for Atletico since he was daddy's little sperm, I guess. So that just makes perfect sense for me. That guy is illustrious. He's creative. He'll be such a beautiful tandem-like position with a Bruno, with a Mata. So I'd love to see him in the Premier League, man.
I mean, I would too. I think it'd be pretty interesting. Just historically, we haven't seen those homegrown Spanish players leave the La Liga to come to United or something. He seems pretty well set at Atletico. So that'd be pretty interesting. I think, again, slightly far short. So that's pretty cool. I think we have a pretty interesting list of targets. Obviously, some are super obvious. Some are actually left field. And some might make some tactical sense for United. Let's move on to the tougher one, according to me. And this is, I had a lot of problem with this. Let's just quickly run through Liverpool. So for Liverpool, I have a number nine fullback, or rather, again, I'm on the fence whether this should be an out and out left back or not. And someone in that attacking, like this weird sort of position that Liverpool has, where it's not an attacking midfielder, but it's not a forward, but it's not a winger, but it's just this one rotational player who can slot in any of these, like a Shaqiri or an Oxlade-Chamberlain playing on the right wing or the right midfield or center midfield. Someone there is according to me. So what are the positions you have for Liverpool?
Interesting. Midfield, exactly the same. However, I almost want to break the solidity of that three midfield, because with players like Naby Keita, while Nardum more consistently, they play the more attacking bits. Shaqiri might be transferred out, hasn't got minutes at all this season. Fabinho is the only recognized holding midfielder. The rest are all, like you said, plug and play. I love AOC. I love how he destroyed City in the Champions League season ago. Mm. So I get where you're coming from, but just putting myself in Klopp's shoes, and he'd want to take off some responsibility from the Mane, Salah, and Firmino, because Firmino's like his trajectory from Hoffenheim, I think, to his last 4-5 years, I think, 3.5 years at Liverpool. That trajectory has been insane. He's, I think, actually scored fewer goals compared to last season, but the way he links up with Salah and Mane, it's like he's playing FIFA Street in his head. Like, the guy no-look passes. So, I'd want someone who can just work and link with him, or someone like him. Like, and even if Origi is playing in place of Firmino, someone to link up with him. So I have attacking midfield. I have centre-back, because I want to get rid of the sort of dead weight, so to say. And a number nine to help Firmino.
Okay, fair enough. So you have a number nine to help Firmino. I have a number nine, which I think they should not say no to. It's obviously Timo Werner. It might not seem like they need him, just given especially with those front three and like someone like an Origi to slot in as a backup. But you just can't say no to a Timo Werner. If a Timo Werner wants to come to your team, and the last couple of seasons he's had, you just cannot say no to him, and you should always be trying to constantly improve. Otherwise, you end up stagnating even before knowing it. So I think Timo Werner to Liverpool is an obvious yes.
I have the same number, the same name. 55 million, I believe, is what is being quoted. That's a steal for Timo Werner.
Complete.
However,
yes.
When he was playing Champions League for the first time, when RB Leipzig was playing Champions League for the first time, they had an away match at a Fenerbahce, Beşiktaş, some Turkish club. Timo Werner got substituted at halftime because he couldn't take how loud it got in that stadium.
Yeah.
Now, if he were to come to COP, to Anfield, he'll get probably louder. And
no, maybe... it's loud. It's loud, but those two clubs that you mentioned and that with Galatasaray, those three clubs, they're notorious. Those stadiums are notorious for being just unbelievably loud. COP is loud. It's a lot of pressure, but it's not that loud. Nothing is that loud, honestly. And he's a kid. No, but... fine. I mean, whatever. Yeah. Is that reason enough for him not to come to Liverpool for 55 million, like you said?
No. I would probably pay half more than that to get him because that sound will be for him, not against.
Right.
But the guy just seems so sensitive that, I don't know, will it work against them? I mean, that's extremely trivial, but back to the football.
Yeah.
The guy's done okay once he made it to the top. I think his potential was probably like an Mbappe level. But he hasn't quite lived up. He's Germany first team now. Hasn't done that well. In fact, the whole team, Joachim Löw, is having a tough time. So maybe that actually works out for Liverpool. He won't be the star. He'll be a perfect understudy to Firmino. Can offer something different. So that works out really well. And like I said, an option for me as well. Another young kiddo on the street, somewhat struggling, is Luka Jovic. I think he'll come for relatively less, something that Liverpool can afford again in the 50, 60, 70 million. I think they paid Frankfurt 50 million for him. So one of these two, under Klopp, works like a win-win for me.
Yeah, I think if it's going to be between Luka Jovic and Timo Werner, the answer is Timo Werner because of what we've heard from Timo Werner himself saying that, yeah, I love Liverpool and all of that. And just the confidence level of both players right now, Luka Jovic has to be a little lower because of the season he's had at Madrid. But I can definitely see Madrid trying to offload Luka Jovic and try to get their Canes and Obas or whoever they want to target because it's Real Madrid. As for the fullback, I want to jump to the fullback right now because it's so weird. Now, Liverpool, just given their defensive setup, they're actually decently covered in terms of having backups for the centre-back role, including Dejan Lovren. They have Joel Matip, they have Joe Gomez. No. As in, Lovren is like the last option, obviously, the best defender in the world.
I mean, Gomez doesn't do it for me. He can't be second choice. He has to be third choice.
I agree. I think it was pretty clear before Matip got injured that Matip and VVD was the best centre-back pairing they had. And it's not the worst. I think what they're really lacking is the fullback because we have Nathaniel Klein, who's a backup right-back for Trent Alexander-Arnold. But he had a really bad...
Bournemouth right now, right?
Yeah, he had a really bad injury as well. So he's not... The ideal backup. What they don't have a backup for is a left back position. If Andy Robertson gets injured, there's no one to back him up, and therefore they have to play the likes of Milner there or someone else. So they need to figure out who they can have in their pockets. Who's maybe not? They don't need like the world's best backup. They don't need the world's best left back. They just need a good left back, young, willing to learn, willing to deputize. And honestly, there are like 20 of those within the Premier League itself. So it's literally the pick of the litter for Klopp and his scouting team to figure out who that person is. It's just they need to get that person into the team ASAP. Because if Robertson does get injured, then Milner cannot consistently play left back and have decent enough cover. The amount of offensive output that Robertson allows them, Milner just can't keep up with that, including backtracking and coming back on defense. So they need an out-and-out left-back who's good at his job, who's young, malleable, and can learn from Robertson and the team. And just like I said, there's just a lot of those options out there who are not going to be that expensive, more than happy to come to Liverpool. It's just a matter of figuring out who it is, whichever the one, the best option is, and bringing them in.
Yeah, I mean, if you are a scout in hiding, I think that makes perfect sense. But ask your scout self, give me a couple of names. Who do you think Liverpool should look at?
I think for left backs especially, there are just so many young guys out there. So I know that Bielsa's team, Leeds United, has a really talented young guy. I think his name is Davis. He's like 18 or 19 years old. Has been playing a really good... He's actually looked really good for Leeds as well. Jamal Lewis for Norwich has been doing a pretty good job. He's been playing a lot for them. I think he's only 20, 21 year old. I mean, it'll boil down to which club is happy to let go of which player for what price. Now, I don't see a Norwich letting go of Jamal Lewis too easily. So maybe an extra 5 or 10 million would do the job there. And maybe then it boils down to whether Jamal Lewis is happy to fight for that left-back position or deputize for Andy Robertson. So there are a bunch of options out there in terms of just the Premier League. And if you start looking outside of the Premier League, which Liverpool's actually done a pretty good job at doing and scouting these slightly cheaper options who, you know,
Bundesliga,
do the job.
Basically.
Bundesliga, yeah, because I don't know, Klopp has just this cheat code on with the Bundesliga. So there are just so many options there. I mean, the list is endless. And the point is that one figure in the team needs to be present who can just be called upon when either Robertson needs rest or to fight for that position with Robertson as well, to give him competition. I mean, he's good, but if a player doesn't have competition, you know the skill and the drive deteriorates over a course of 2, 3, 4 seasons. So you need that person. And we saw that happen when he got injured. Like Milner he's just about cutting it, but he's not doing that extra that you expect from an Andy Robertson's position.
Correct.
What about
I agree.
You? Do you have any defensive reinforcements for Liverpool?
Yep. Center back. I want to get rid of the Matips, the Gomez's. Lovren has to leave. And I want, you'll hate this, no rumors, no links. But I think he hasn't had the best time with being the youngest, most expensive defender. I'm talking about Matthijs de Ligt.
Don't even say it, Dilik.
Okay. Pair him up, national team and club, Van Dijk and de Ligt, lighting it up. Not lighting, lighting it up.
So absurd. I don't even want to comment on that. It kind of sounds cool, but no, that's not going to happen. You know, Dilik has been the butt of a lot of transfer out rumors. I don't get it. I don't get why he's getting the hate. I mean, sure, it's not like he said, I need some club to pay 80 million for me. It's not up to him. It's like two clubs are negotiating and figuring out what, like, and then release clause and stuff. So it's not like up to him. So for him to face so much flack for the amount he cost is not cool. He's super young. And defenders who have never played in Italy, firstly, a defender who's just played a season or two top flight football, to be thrown at the heart of the meanest defense a league can play, which is the Italian league, it's obviously going to take more than one season to settle into. So I have nothing lost in terms of my hopes and dreams for De Ligt. I still think he's going to become one of the best defenders in the world sooner or later. So he shouldn't leave, firstly. To Liverpool is just absurd. I wish to God that does not happen. Otherwise, we're just going to be left with our aging defenders and Demiral, who's good. Okay, that seems like a fantasy pick more than anything for you. Who's next in your Liverpool list?
I have two considerations for that attacking midfield role.
Okay, shoot.
And you'll know one of them really well. United has been apparently after him for about 2-3 windows, minus the last Jan window. And that's, again, I don't know how this guy's still so young. 25 years old, I think. It's Sergei Milinkovic-Savic.
Yep. Beast. And, killing it at Lazio for like three seasons now. He's insane. I think everyone wants him. Everyone's been linked to him at some point of time or the other. The Lazio president's kind of bonkers, so I don't know if he'll let him go. But I don't think he can hold on to him for much longer. It's absurd. And Savic needs to leave Lazio as well. I think he's a player of pedigree who deserves trophies and fame as a player. So that's pretty interesting. I'm trying to think of how he'll slot into a 4-3-3 at Liverpool. And like, who the sort of...
I mean, I see Fabinho as holding. And maybe if you're playing... Like, he can substitute for a Wijnaldum. So, I know, I just see him at this as this steel enforcer, running things, has Fabinho to cover for him, has it freedom, holds his position. He'll just be like playing an orchestra, doing his thing.
Yeah.
Probably like a more solid, less adventurous version of a Bruno Fernandes at United, maybe.
Yeah, I like him. I like him at Liverpool now that you think about it. Maybe not even Wijnaldum, but it's going to be weird. So, like, maybe they can have, like, Henderson and Fabinho rotate that holding midfield position. Yes. And he can play where Henderson plays or where Milner plays. You know, like, have, like, these two options as opposed to only Wijnaldum linking up with Firmino and the forward line.
Yes.
That could work out well. I think that's a pretty cool option. Who's the other person?
So this other kid on the block, Bayer Leverkusen, he's literally the Superman of young Germany. Yeah. This guy sometimes plays support striker. So I know, just thinking about that Firmino role, Bundesliga, young, up and coming, will be happy to play somewhat second fiddle, learn from the biggies at Liverpool. This kid's just got everything. He's like a lazy, illusionary giant. He's super tall, but he's super technical. Can jump high, goes for headers, can play make, has a good shot, good free kick. So he just looks like the complete player.
He does. And a lot of talent for someone who's that young. And he's actually had a tremendous season. I like that option too. I think, like you said, his sort of... his ideal position is yet to be reinforced just because of how much he's done. So that's pretty interesting because that's actually a sort of players that managers love, right? Like a player with talent that they can mold and like sort of have like this person that just makes it like a missing link in the team so that they can figure out what the team should look like and have the right person to fit into a spot. That'd be kind of cool to have either of these players at Liverpool, I agree. The third player I have for Liverpool is actually an already existing Liverpool player. Now, coming to think of the discussion that we've had, and even if a Timo Werner does come, I can totally foresee one of Mane, Salah, or Firmino leaving the club. The player that I'm inclined, not wanting to, but inclined towards thinking that might leave the club is Salah. I'm pretty sure Real would like cut off like half a hand or someone to just get someone like Salah. And I totally see it happen, especially if a Werner comes in, because again, evolution, stagnation, moving forward and stuff like that. So if that does happen, and if this whole moving pieces come together in the way that we're thinking, I think one, again, a very prudent sort of very pragmatic option for Liverpool would be to bring Harry Wilson back to the squad from loan.
Ah, Bournemouth.
He's had a tremendous season at Bournemouth, man. Like a breakout season. Prefers playing attacking mid wing position, so he'd slot right into that gap that might be left with a Salah or someone leaving. And having that player who loves, he's a winger, but you see him playing these attacking mid sort of central attacking forward cam sort of positions. Like he's young, again, malleable, moldable, and can fill into this whole void that I see of having someone in the Liverpool squad who's the right rotational moving piece who can just slot into, okay, today we need a winger, there you go. Today we need someone sitting behind a Timo Werner, there you go. Today we need someone who's playing slightly deeper but needs to link up with our attacking guys, there you go. So I think Harry Wilson will be a pretty good option for these guys. They also have Ryan Brewster, who's doing pretty well at Swansea, out on loan as well. But I think he might need at least a season more to sort of get there. I think Harry Wilson's already there. He's ready for top five football, and I think getting him back would be a pretty cool move by Liverpool.
I somewhat disagree, because Harry Wilson reminds me more of a big fish, small pond situation. Something like Charlie Adam killed it with that orange wearing jersey team.
You just destroyed my pick by using that example. You destroyed it.
Exactly. So, and that's exactly how I understood big fish, small pond. He would rather be a small pond, a small fish in a big pond. So right. Harry Wilson is doing his thing at Bournemouth, has some freedom to express himself. But for him to replace someone like a Salah, even if Werner comes in, I just think what Mane and Salah offer, they're at the top of their game. They are competing with each other for scoring. So Salah hasn't lost it yet. I think Werner is too young. Even if he does end up coming to Liverpool, I think Salah has nothing to worry about. And also, if he were to go out like a Real, I don't think so. These guys are going to leave Klopp. Klopp is like their daddy, mommy, granddaddy all in one. He's one of the nicest guys. He expresses himself extremely openly. I even saw this video that Tifo did, where Liverpool are one of the very few clubs in England that employ a throwing coach. And
right
before, they had this coach, again, from the Bundesliga, from Klopp's time at Mainz when he started. They lost the ball or possession from throw-ins more than 60% of the time. After this guy comes in, he's been there for about 2-3 years now. He's working with multiple clubs as well. They've scored 10 to 20% of assists and goals from throw-ins. So only someone like Klopp can sort of manifest this environment, this universe. And I love this sort of freedom he's been given by the Liverpool owners, FSB. So I don't see Salah leaving. And to get one of your loanies back, I don't know. I mean, he's young. He'd want to make first team for Liverpool, but I see him being sold to one of the lesser clubs, so to say.
Interesting. I think what Liverpool might be hoping for is that, all right, let's loan him out for another season. Let him develop more, and we'll wait to see where this goes. Because undoubtedly, clubs will be bidding for Salah and Mane, given the last 2-3 seasons they've had, right? And Liverpool's always been very pragmatic when it comes to transfers. Like, when you think that they would never let go for Coutinho, they happily let go just because Klopp's like, it's absurd for me to say no to that price. Like, it's or the club to say no. So they've been very pragmatic when it comes to business. So I won't be surprised if they do end up letting a Mane or a Salah or a Firmino or whoever it is go for the right price, just because it's just undeniable, right? And just to, even if a Timo Werner does come in or does not come in, like, they would need some sort of backup. So maybe Liverpool's thinking is that, hey, let's just have Harry Wilson maybe go back on loan. And then we can always recall him if he's on this right trajectory as a player in terms of development. Then we can always call him back when we actually need that right sort of a winger. So I think that's what they're thinking in terms of Harry Wilson, as opposed to developing him so that they can end up selling him. I think they're developing him so that they can end up having a backup ready to go, who's good enough to slot in when at least one of these three do end up leaving. Because just given the level at which they've played, clubs will undoubtedly be willing to pay a lot of money for these guys. So I'm not sure if Salah, Mane and all might leave on their own accord, but if Liverpool gets offered the right price for these guys, I think they'll be more than happy for them to leave.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of rounding this discussion off, I don't know, I almost see Harry Wilson being like a Dominic Solanke, who was signed by Liverpool from Chelsea as a forward. Didn't live up to it at all. Thank God Chelsea let go of him. Although, Poole made a lot more.
You really hate Harry Wilson. Huh? First you compared to Charlie Adam, now you compare him to Dominic Solanke.
No, because like the situation the same. No disrespect to Wilson. I love his free kick first few weeks of the league. But, I don't know. And coincidentally enough, Solanke was sold to Bournemouth. So, and also, going back to the Coutinho situation, that time Klopp's project wasn't at its high or at its maturity. Coutinho was a one-man show, scoring goals left, right, and center. That freaking powerful side foot, God knows how the guy does it. He's so short, quick fat, that he can't wear an meant for the player's jersey. He has to wear half a size smaller. So he goes to the Bayern Munich official shop and gets his name chapoed on one of the replica jerseys.
Oh, wow.
So that's what Coutinho was. And that time, the system, the support striker, the Firmino, wasn't in full flow. So I think the system is so rock solid. It's finally bearing its fruit. Won a UCL, two finals in a row. Lost to Atletico Madrid. Let's see what they do in the second leg. Definitely winning the Premier League, unless something really weird happens. So I don't know if that system will sort of destabilize, at least for the next three windows, which is 2021 summer window. I don't see these three leaving. I think they're going to continue to sort of give that output, 20 goals, 15, 20 goals a season, reaching quarterfinals, semifinals, finals, competing and dethroning City, so to say. So, I don't know. It's just like they must be waiting. They must be licking their finger to replace the Milners, like you said. Get back up for Wijnaldum, get back up for Fabinho, get a decent centre-back. They struck gold, and they literally, cherry on the top was Alisson and Van Dijk. And we saw that in the UCL final that they lost to Madrid. They had Firmino, they had Salah, they had Mane. They pressed like crazy, but still, those are the missing pieces. And some of the parts greater than individual sum, that's exactly what Van Dijk and Alisson did. So I can't wait to see them spend some good freaking money, and it'll only push the front three to just go crazy. And when I say front three, obviously Salah and Mane are already at the top fighting with each other. I'm talking about Firmino. I think that guy's just having fun now. He doesn't need to work or train. He's freaking having a ball. And when he's having a ball, we have a ball looking at him. And I can't wait for that peak to sustain itself, at least for another season.
I hope it does too, man. It's a pleasure to watch him play. And on paper, statistically, he might not be strong, but like it's clear to see on the field that he's the right man for that team, and how he gets everything to come together. I mean, whatever success they've had, safe to say that they wouldn't have had at that level if Firmino wasn't there. All right, so that kind of wraps up what we think Liverpool and Man United should be doing, along with a few updates. Oh, you have
I have one for United, I forgot. This is Asterix, Pochettino.
Oh, I agree. I have agreed since, 8 months now? 7 months? I don't know what that's going to lead to.
Like,
the confidence in Ole is slowly increasing, especially after Bruno came. Like, it's increased more and more. So
if they want Kane, like, that's why he didn't leave Tottenham. That's why he stuck around trophy-less. That's why Poch doesn't have a trophy.
That's a very interesting theory.
Yeah, I think literally he's one of the best managers tactically. Espanyol against Barcelona. I don't know where he went from there. I think he came from Espanyol to Southampton and then to Spurs.
Yeah.
The guy's a beast, man. I love the guy. I love how the signings, the limited budgets, Lucas Moura from nowhere, PSG struggling. He's a beast. Single-handedly destroyed United. Eriksen, Harry Kane, the fullbacks, the keeper. And this is a Chelsea fan admiring Spurs. Okay. So I love Pochettino.
Well, you're admiring Pochettino more than Spurs and what Pochettino did at Spurs. So that's different.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, I agree with you. I think Pochettino any team would enhance that team. And I've always been an advocate of Pochettino at United over Ole. But I feel like Ole's stock has risen, especially since January. So remains to be seen. I like that Kane Pochettino theory. I don't know how much Kane wants to play with Pochettino. Maybe he just wants a break because he doesn't seem to be enjoying Mourinho that much. So maybe he does want Pochettino. Who's to
because
say?
He didn't get called to that park training session.
yeah. Maybe he's like, oh, you don't call me to the park. I'm leaving. Yeah, I'm out. Anyway, so that does it for this episode, episode 33 of the TFC or quarantine episode, lockdown episode 2. We'll be back next week with some more teams that we're going to tackle in terms of who we think they should be targeting in the transfer market, along with updates from the world of football as it stands at that point of time. Thank you guys for listening. Hope you guys enjoyed, and we'll catch you next week. Bye-bye.
And don't forget to follow us on all social media at Muncha Podcasts.